I'm Melissa Lee, and this is Fast Money. Tonight's Trader lineup, Guy Adami, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, and Dan Nathan. Tonight on Fast, we are charting the sell-off with the three most troubling charts in the markets, according to one of our traders. Plus, Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson is standing by in the Fast line. He's been calling for a 10% pullback. We'll get his take on today's big drop. And later, we're gearing up for the tech titans, how our traders are positioned as we get ready to kick off a monster week of earnings. We start off with the market sell-off front and center. The S&P dropping more than 1.8% today for its worst day in more than a month, while the Dow erased its gains for the month of October. All 11 S&P sectors were negative today, with energy hit the hardest. Four big factors, of course, weighing on the market here. A new record for coronavirus cases, no stimulus. We are kicking off the busiest week of earnings, and the election just 8 days away. So for all of these reasons, should investors pare their risk right now? And is that what we saw playing out in the market? Tim, we'll start off with you.
Well, I think if you look at the trend really since mid-July, we had an up 10, down 10, up 10% again in the market. Now we pulled back almost 5%. This is largely a range train around uncertainty on elections and stimulus. And I think if you look at the companies that are going to report later this week with that big eye on Thursday where we have Amazon, Apple, Facebook, you know, you name it, that's coming out in terms of where the mega cap market tech has been. But I think the COVID cases stepping up a notch, EU putting in additional curfews. I mean, these are headline grabbing dynamics that certainly the market is going to feel the weight of. And I think we've been digesting the stimulus talks or lack thereof for weeks, if not, you know, a couple months. I think the market is very much range bound. I think traders in the short to medium term don't feel like they have to put capital to work before the elections. But I think largely the same backdrop is there. We're going to talk about the 10-year bond and bond yields higher. I think some of those trends stay intact. And I think the defensiveness of mega cap tech will still appear to be a place where the market is comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. I mean, in this market backdrop, Guy, do you stick with that tech trade, which seemed to be the defensive trade for so long?
It's clearly been the winner, obviously, you know, mm-hmm. But the market scared me for a long time. Market has terrified me for a long time. Let me put it out there. And here we are at 3,400. I mean, this is effectively the same level we topped out at, the all-time high back in February, I think 16th or 17th or thereabouts. The only difference is, and this is why I continue to be concerned, is because back then, the VIX was 14. Look where the VIX closed today. The VIX closed at 32.5 today. Topped out at 33.60 was where we closed back on September 3rd in terms of the VIX. I mean, those are all very concerning things. I mean, with that said, the right thing to do has been buy every dip in this marketplace. I think this is your pivot point. I think the names that Tim just talked about better say some really good things on Thursday, specifically Apple. Because you question really, you ask yourself, did Apple shoot their bullets? Did they have use all the arrows in their quiver last quarter when they announced a fantastic quarter, wondering if a lot was pulled forward? And that stock split, I mean, that's the one that I'm really focused on this week.
They had that. They had the launch of the 12. Karen, we've got a lot of the social stocks pulling forward potentially gains to be made off the back of earnings when Snap reported. So how do you think we're set up, given all of these sort of wild cards in the markets right now? We are also starting off earnings season with this very particular setup, which may not be conducive to more gains here.
You mean all five biggest companies reporting on the same day?
Right.
Or the same
yeah.
48 hours? Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to make of that, except for I guess it adds volatility. To me, each story is somewhat different. Apple, I think actually that the story will be about commentary going forward. I don't know that it's so much about this quarter. And so when we saw the Snap numbers, which were huge, that was great for Facebook, good for Google. They pulled back somewhat. So I'm still long that, both of those, Facebook and Alphabet. I like those stories. I think it's intact. Microsoft is a little stretched, but they've been doing a great job. Compare that with SAP. I don't know if we'll talk about that more later, but Microsoft executing over and over again, SAP not as much. I'm long. I'm actually, I always have protection. I sold some today with the VIX, as Guy mentioned, spiking up to 33. I think I sold it when it was around 32 or something. That feels scary to sell puts when the VIX is spiking. Mm-hmm. But that's also why you own them. You own them for when the market trades off a lot. And then I bought some Ulta today, which it peaked at like 242, and today you could buy it at 218, 219, maybe a little lower actually. So it's scary to buy when there, you know, I always say when there's blood on the streets, that's when you have to buy, even if the blood is your own. So I was out there bleeding and buying a little and selling some puts.
Very visual, Karen. Dan, what do you think those conference calls are going to be like in terms of earnings? I mean, if you're a company, what is your incentive at this point to actually give guidance for the current quarter, let alone the following year, given the uncertainties of the election ahead, the uncertainties of the spike in COVID cases, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think it's a really important point, the FMAGA complex in particular. The sort of visibility that these companies have because of their moats, because of their reach, and just in general, it's going to be far better than most of the rest of the market, especially more cyclical sort of companies. So I think you're going to probably see the sort of guidance and confidence out of these companies that have basically let them flex all this year, winning the pandemic for all intents and purposes, and their stocks certainly have. So I don't think you're going to see massive disappointments out of Microsoft like you saw at SAP. But I will say this about the stock market. You know, Tim just mentioned the kind of, you know, the 10% up, 10% down. We've definitely been range bound for the last couple of months. I think it's important to remember that that 10% decline from the September 2nd high took about 3 weeks to work itself out here. Here we are down about 5%. It's taken about a couple weeks. All of the uncertainty around the stimulus, around the election, we are going to get that resolution in about a week. And I think if investors feel pretty good and there's an uncontested result, no matter what the result is, I think the market probably gets back to it. That's not me pounding the table by any means, but there's a lot of things that could go wrong. And I think the coronavirus spiking right now is one of the things that kind of highlights that the presupposition of this market and of just everything that's going on, that the virus wasn't coming back in any way, shape, or form that would somehow halt the economic recovery, is just downright silly. So when we hear the term complacent or overly positive sentiment, that's why you get periods like we have right now, because we forget that we are not in control of any of this.
Complacent about coronavirus and maybe additional lockdown measures at this point, but maybe also complacent about the elections. You know, Dan brought up the point about, you know, an uncontested election. We might not know the result. The election may not even be called for days after the election, depending on the ballot counts. There are about a half a dozen states that don't count mail-in ballots until election day, Tim. I mean, do you think that the markets have priced in the possibility that come the day after election, Wednesday, Thursday, we don't have a clear winner yet? And what does volatility look like in that case?
Well, I think volatility today is giving you, it's a foreshadowing in some ways, is you know, maybe this is some kind of a harbinger for some sense of where that uncertainty could persist. I think we will get clarity as it relates to the composition of the Senate, which I think is also very important for the markets. And we've made a lot of arguments about what the market might actually do with essentially a standoff between you know, the White House and the Senate, at least some balance of power, and that actually might also be positive. So, but there's no question. I think that's part of where the markets are right now. And another round of COVID, even though, I feel eternally optimistic as a human being, and I have a lot of confidence in the pharma industry and the process around it, that we're going to get that vaccine. We're certainly finding better treatments, better numbers on mortality. I think the markets overall, looking at the economy, have some reason to look forward and actually the impact of what that might look like when we actually get a vaccine. But meanwhile, we've got a very accommodative Fed. We've got a housing market that I think remains on fire, despite the fact that all parts of that trade aren't totally working right now. So I think that the uncertainty we're talking about makes so much sense. And that's why I think a lot of traders, and I mean professional and retail alike, might have packed it in last week. I think it would make sense that you wouldn't want to trade too hard through this.
I mean, Guy, that makes a whole lot of sense given all the things that are up in the air at this point.
I'm hard-pressed, you know, short of a landslide either way, I'm hard-pressed to believe you're going to have any declared winner within a week, if not a couple weeks out from November 3rd. And that, to me, speaks to a vol that, again, closed today at 32.5. If you go back, I think the June 2nd high or thereabouts was 41 in the VIX. To me, that makes all the sense in the world in terms of what you just outlined. Again, just everything that I read suggests that, you know, this thing is going to be hotly contested and the vitriol on both sides only going to increase over the next couple weeks. That is not market friendly in any way. I hope I'm wrong. I just don't see how I can be.
The other possibility is that it is not a contested election, that there is a winner, and that there's civil unrest, Dan, and that's certainly the other wild card, which could be, you know, damaging and psychologically damaging for the markets.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, listen, I think it's really interesting that that was something that we were talking a whole heck of a lot about in May and June when we really did have civil unrest in this country to some extreme. I actually tend to be an optimist about our democratic process here. I think there's a very strong likelihood that not only November 4th do we have a very clear winner of the White House, but we also do of the Senate, and that we also have the sort of messaging that we will have a peaceful transfer of power. So you tell me, based on what we all just discussed over the last 5 minutes, what you think the market does in that scenario with the expectation that further infrastructure spending and a very accommodative Fed will outdo anything on the regulatory or the tax front. And you say to yourself, that's a pretty good setup for stocks. And I don't think that's really being priced into the market right here.
So the risk reward is to the upside in your view, Dan?
Well, I think that the worst case scenario is on the tip of everybody's tongue because we live in a 24-hour news cycle where, and especially on social media, where that's the stuff that gets clicked and that's what we're all thinking about. The one thing that we weren't thinking about in 2016 was that Trump had a strong likelihood to win, and he did. And you remember the volatility on over every risk asset around the globe in that 24-hour period. No one knew what to do. So I think that knee-jerk first reaction on something that people aren't expecting, you might see it reverse, and it might be a very calming effect for markets and volatility in general.
I hope for our country's sake, Dan, that you are absolutely 100% correct on that front. Karen, do you agree with Dan? Clear winner.
I do agree. I think that it's certainly the unrest and the no clear winner is a likelihood, but I think the more likely scenario is clarity and a relatively peaceful response to that. Not that there won't be skirmishes or whatever, but I think that that is the more likely scenario, that we have clarity. Maybe not that day, maybe the next day. Mm-hmm. But even if I knew that we wouldn't have an outcome for several days, I wouldn't know how to trade that. I just buy companies that I like at valuations that I like. I don't know how to put in, you know, for the likelihood of a contested election. And when do I know when to unwind that? So that's too difficult. I'm just staying with what I got.
Our next guest says we're only about halfway through this sell-off. Let's bring in Morgan Stanley's chief U.S. equity strategist, Mike Wilson. He joins us on the fast line. Mike, great to speak with you.
Hey, Melissa, how are you?
So halfway brings us to down 10% or so?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, the panel did a great job of kind of laying out all the concerns, the things that people are aware of. I give the best award to Karen for the Halloween visual on the blood in the streets. Mm-hmm. And also, I agree with her completely at the end there talking about, look, you know, you have to have a framework about how you're investing and not get kind of pulled around by all these different events that we know are kind of in front of us. And we got to deal with that. But if I'm buying good companies at the right price that I have confidence in over the next 12 months, well, then I should see through that, and it should work out for me. It's the same. We think about the market the same way. So, at 3,500, we're just kind of full on valuation. Okay, that's 21 times. You know, the forward numbers of 160 is where we are today, and we think kind of a fair value is closer to 20 times, which is 3,200, 3,250, something like that. And in an overshoot, you could go below that. So the risk reward as you're getting up around 3,500. Just wasn't that good. That's why we called for a 10% correction just to go back to the end of that range. We've had a range of 3,100 to 3,550 since the end of August, and it's, you know, it's kind of ping-pong back and forth. That's the framework, and so we want to add risk. If you think about it in market terms, you want to add risk towards the low end of that range, and you want to fade it towards the upper end of that range, at least until some of these things are, you know, some of these concerns are at least, you know, have come and gone. And I think, you know, Guy talked about the VIX. I mean, this is how a big part of our framework is. When the VIX is higher, your equity risk premium has to be higher, too. And so at 32, you know, the equity risk premium is too low, right? So the multiple, I would argue, is too high. So, and that's really the framework, and that's we're just trying to be disciplined around that. So you have about another 5%, maybe 6-7% if it gets really bad. So call it 3,100 on the bottom end.
So how does that trading range framework change, Mike, when we have clarity on the elections? Let's assume that's in 9 days or so.
Yeah. So, you know, the VIX will come down, you know, in theory, right? So it'll become less volatile. We'll have more clarity around who's in control, what the fiscal package might look like, what the timing of that might be. And by the way, let's not forget about the virus, which you all mentioned, the second wave. That's also weighing on volatility right now because we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. I'm optimistic that ultimately we'll get through this, but we got to go through that period. So, but as volatility comes down, as these events come and go, then the equity risk premium can come down, which is the same thing as saying the multiple can go back up.
Hey, Mike, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. So below the surface of the market, obviously, we have subsectors, some that have been outperforming even during this period of sideways since mid-July. What do you like here? And do you think we can continue to get this rebound in these some of these industrial names, some of these transport names that have been red hot? Or do you think higher rates could raise the tailwind, I should say, more tailwind behind the banks? Talk to us about how you're playing it below the headline market.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the simple trading range, which is, you know, kind of the game we have to play, or, you know, as we talk about strategists, the more interesting story is beneath the surface. There is a really big bifurcation between what I would call overvalued stocks and undervalued stocks, depending on what your outlook is. So our outlook is pretty constructive for next year. We think the economy could be pretty hot, red hot, in terms of growth. Obviously, easy comparison year. We could get more fiscal. Likely, we'll get more fiscal once the, you know, the new administration or the existing administration is inaugurated again. And as that happens, what you want to be focused on are companies that are going to deliver outsized earnings relative to expectations. Okay, so there's a couple things to think about. You mentioned a couple areas, you know, in the industrial space, the material space, we like a lot. Financials, we think rates are going to move up once you get past these risk events in the near term. It'll drive financials. Some of the smaller mid-cap companies, which we think are underappreciated. And basically, it's a reopening theme, right? As you continue to reopen the economy, a lot of these parts of the market that has not been able to fully operate are going to see tremendous operating leverage. And I'll just finish up by saying, you know, the third quarter earnings season so far, you know, what we're seeing is that the revisions are flattening out, meaning we're seeing companies beat, but the out-year revisions are not as robust as they were in the second quarter, which makes sense as you get into the recovery. What we're looking for are stocks where those revisions are going to really surprise on the upside, and it may surprise you where those are. It probably isn't going to be the companies that have been benefiting from the lockdown this year. Those companies are going to have smaller revisions as the comparisons get tougher. It's going to be more of the reopening type stories.
Mike, it's Karen. Thanks for being on. How important or not is this quarter, like really this week is actually the bulk of it, for your model?
It's very important because what we want to try and confirm, Karen, is where is the operating leverage already showing up? You know, one of our themes for this year is that because the unemployment rate shot up so fast, right, operating costs have come down tremendously, and then the government has helped out with fiscal stimulus. So what we're seeing is the companies that are operating are seeing huge increases in margins and profitability. It may be surprising, but based on the third quarter estimates where we see them today, the median stock in the S&P 500 will actually have higher operating margins in the third quarter than they did a year ago. Pretty remarkable, right, in terms of the efficiency there. So that's what we're really focused on, is we're trying to find the companies where the margin upside is surprising, where we think that could continue into next year. And once again, it comes back to these sort of reopening stories. You know, some of the existing growth stocks, too, and some of the winners, current winners, where they've got great efficiency. So that's kind of the formula. That's what we're really looking for in the third quarter earnings season.
Mike, always great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Wilson, Morgan Stanley. Guy, I think that's an important point that Mike was bringing up just now about operating margin. We have to be careful, though, that these would be sustainable operating margins. Some companies got boosts because they weren't spending as much just because of the times that we're in.
It's so, you know, I got to tell you, it's to me, it's so fascinating. Margins are increasing. If you look around, I mean, across the board, and that's very good for companies, but it speaks to a much different problem, something that Dan's talked about. You know, companies have learned how to do more with less, and those operating margins by definition go higher, but you have to wonder what does that augur for the broader economy in terms of the job market going forward here in the United States. I'm not smart enough to answer that question, but I think it's great on one hand. I think it really paints a sort of a dire picture on the other hand. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, Dan, last word.
Yeah, I just say that issue of structural unemployment going forward, high unemployment, is going to be here to stay for the time being. And I just, again, worry about the pull forward. We're going to see it in a lot of consumer-facing companies, the pull forward in demand and what that means for demand going forward for the next few quarters. So I'm not particularly optimistic about that. You know, we're sitting on an S&P 500 that's up 5% and a NASDAQ that's up 26%. That's on a year where earnings were down, I don't know, 30%. Last year in 2019, the S&P was up almost 30%, and earnings growth were flat. So what are we willing to pay for these earnings that have basically been subsidized by the government? I'm not certain that we are going to get the sort of returns that we expect or would like to expect on the sort of economic recovery that a lot of optimists are hoping for over the next couple of years.
Coming up, much more in today's market sell-off, including the stark warning from SAP that sent that stock to its worst day in two decades. Plus, we're breaking down the safety trade, investors piling into bonds today. But one of our traders says today's bond rally is going to be short-lived. He'll tell us why when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. A really rough day for SAP. Shares tumbling more than 23% after the company slashed revenue and profit forecast. The company warning coronavirus lockdowns will impact demand for its software through the first half of next year. And Dan, we should note that this company had given guidance April 24th, and now it's back saying that things are worse.
Well, it's really interesting, and I think this goes back, Mel, to the conversation we were just having about visibility. You know, think about giving guidance back in April. A lot of companies thought this was going to be a one or two quarter thing. They discounted out what maybe some worst case scenarios were, and then they gave full year guidance. That's what SAP did. It's really interesting, though, that the stock from mid-April or so kind of rose about 50% to its recent highs. You know where it went today? It went back to exactly where it was trading when it gave that guidance. If you look at the one-year chart back on April 8th, I think, or so. So to me, you know, a lot of analysts were saying this is very company-specific. Maybe it was very poor modeling of the company on their own business. But it just speaks to the fact that, what are the words that we were given using before? Complacency, unusually high sentiment. You know, everybody's got a plan until they get socked in the mouth, and I think that's what happened here with SAP.
On the conference call, the company also said there are a lot of businesses that are putting off spending because of how the pandemic has unfolded. Guy, you're grimacing. I feel like you were in Dan's head when he was talking about that chart.
Dan's in my head because I'm looking back in early May. If you look where this stock exploded to the upside from, was basically 113, which is exactly basically where we traded down to today. On, oh, by the way, about 19 times normal volume. SAP typically trades about 600,000 shares or so a day. So everything Dan has said is spot on. You know, I understand that Fastly is not the same company, but go back and look at what they said. Look at the move we saw in that stock. $8 billion market cap company, I understand. SAP is $120-something billion. Much different, but one has to look at this and say that, to me, what they said wasn't a 23% move, yet that's what the market punished them by. And then you start to think about the dialogue and some of the commentary they made, and it is concerning because I think everybody or a lot of people thought software was impenetrable in this environment we find ourselves in.
All right, we've got much more ahead here on Fast Money. Here's what's coming up next.
There are only 8 days left to the election, and markets are bracing for what could be a drawn-out battle. What it means for where you put your money. And later, shares of Exxon approaching a key level that could signal big trouble for the energy complex. What could be next for the sector? We've got that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks plunging on Wall Street today as we close in on Election Day. It is now just 8 days away. So what is the biggest election risk for investors right now? Let's bring in Raymond James, Senior Policy Analyst, Ed Mills. Ed, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Melissa. Great to be here.
What is the biggest risk in your view?
The biggest risk from every investor I ask here at Raymond James is a contested election. Something that draws this out. What the market wants is a clear winner on November 3rd, or it declared pretty soon thereafter, and then a quick pivot for additional fiscal relief for this economy so that we can get on with the economic recovery and focus on fundamentals rather than politics.
What is the, I hate to ask this question, but I have to ask it, what do you think the impact on the market is if we have a clear outcome when it comes to Congress, but we have an unclear outcome when it comes to the presidency?
The most important is by far the presidency.
Sure.
One of the things that I'm watching early on election night is the state of North Carolina. It is a swing state. It has a Senate election that could be clearly determinant of the majority in the Senate. They count all of their absentee ballots starting 14 days before the election, so they're counting them now. on election night, if it is clear that Joe Biden has won North Carolina and the Democrat has won the Senate seat, it might take a little bit into the evening, then it's a Democratic sweep. If it's close or if Trump has won, I think that's where the conventional wisdom could be up for disruption.
And here's one real question. Let's say it's a clear-cut Joe Biden victory, and in the ensuing days, you see a significant rally in the U.S. equity market, which will no doubt infuriate the president, given his, you know, his want for the market to go higher under his administration. My question is, if you see both those things happen, how much of a potential monkey wrench in the system could that be? A rising market in that month and a half period where President Trump would be a lame duck president?
Yeah, so the real question is would it be a wounded duck kind of time period in that any deal on fiscal stimulus would be off? I do believe that's why Majority Leader McConnell last week said the Senate would only consider a bill if there was a presidentially supported bill, leaving open the fact that President Trump could back off any deal that is struck. However, there are some things that he would like to get done. The December 11th deadline for funding the government and a rise in COVID cases put pressure on it. The market would also be looking at a scenario where in a post-inauguration period, we'd have a much larger package. So I think that's where the pivot goes to rather than a kind of near-term deal. So quickest deal in a Trump re-election, largest deal in a Democratic sweep. The biggest uncertainty there would be a Biden victory with the Republican Senate. Would Mitch McConnell play ball in that scenario?
Is civil unrest, regardless of if we have clarity or we don't have clarity in terms of the presidency, Ed, does that factor in? Is that a risk factor in your view, or is that so small compared to the others?
It is, Melissa, I think it's an important thing to think about. Ultimately, we are a very divided society. And so that's part of the reason why I think the market has wanted a clear winner, because I think there is going to be a segment of this population, regardless of how this election turns out, that will not accept the winner. If there is doubt in the election, that's where we see a greater chance of civil unrest, including a real chance that there is a difference between the popular vote winner and the Electoral College vote winner. I think there's real upside real kind of a downside risk to the market from a civil unrest scenario kind of playing out as you discussed.
Ed, thank you. Ed Mills, Raymond James.
Thank you.
Tim Seymour, you wake up day after election day. The risk is to the what? Upside or downside?
Are you giving me an outcome here, Mel? Come on.
No, choose your own adventure.
Tell me something. Well, I think the adventure is one around clarity. There's not much more I can add to a conversation where there's uncertainty that markets are not going to do a whole lot. They're going to trend lower. They're going to trend lower till we have some sense on the pathway. I have zero expectation we're going to get stimulus with a lame duck Senate as well. I think it's probably not until the first quarter or late first quarter you could get something. I think the infrastructure bill is the closest thing we have to, you know, very bipartisan, and I think there are places to begin to play that now. So the trades that are going to work, though, especially if rates are tricking higher because of some expectation, here's some scenario analysis. If you're getting more of a blue wave, I think you're going to continue to see rates go a bit higher, and that's going to support some of those infrastructure trades. That's going to support some of those resource trades. As I opened the show, I think there are a lot of folks that are positioned now how they expect to be positioned for the next 3 weeks.
All right. Coming up, the three most troubling charts in the markets right now. What's got Dan so concerned about the action he's seeing in them? And later, we're counting down to earnings from the first of the five big tech names reporting this week. What option traders are saying we should expect from Microsoft. A lot more Fast Money right after this break. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks getting slammed today with the S&P 500 notching its worst day in more than a month. And today's sell-off has Dan Nathan putting on his technician hat. He's flagging the three most troubling charts in the market. But he is not alone on this one. This is a Fast Money Technicals tag team. The chart master, Carter Braxton-Worth, is also standing by to see if there's really trouble brewing in these charts. So, Dan, why don't you kick us off with the first chart on Exxon?
First disclaimer, I learned everything I know about charts from Carter, so let's just get that out of the way right now. This is kind of good, the bad, and the ugly when we think about the three names we're going to talk about. Let's talk about Exxon first. This stock is down 50% on the year. This thing hasn't seen an uptick in like 3 months or so. To me, I go back and I look at that low from the spring at 30, and I say to myself, oh my goodness, if that thing breaks, it's about 10% away. That takes you all the way back to the 2002 low. And I say warning bells are going to go off in the energy complex. So I think you got to keep a really close eye on this Exxon chart right here in that $30 level.
Carter, what do you tell your grasshopper?
Sure. Well, I mean, I can't disagree if everything he knows is for me, kind of in a box there. But hey, listen, the key is this. Does Exxon break its March low? One way to figure that out, of course, is look at other big integrated. So we know that Royal Dutch, for instance, is right at its March low. Dan just mentioned that Exxon is 10% above. We know that BP has already broken that March low, and it's about 10, 12% below. Chevron's much higher above. In any event, the issue is this. When you do hover ominously just above a prior low, and other stocks in comparable positions have broken or are on the cusp of breaking, the bet is that it does break. So I'm with Dan here for sure. Lower prices for Exxon. What it means for the energy overall, remember, the entire sector is only 1.9% of the S&P. And two stocks, Exxon and Chevron, are half the weight. It's almost not even a sector anymore.
All right. Dan, the next one, one of the big bank stocks charts. So what's troubling you about this one?
Yeah. So if Exxon was the ugly, this is kind of the good. It's Bank America. This thing is down 30% of the year, but I think importantly, it's up about 38% from its March low. It's making what I think some technicians would call a little bit of a wedge. Carter would say that tension is really building here. But to me, you know, there's a lot of optimism about this group. They actually act pretty well over the last few months. But I just feel like a break of that uptrend from the March lows, and I think you have a lot of these money center banks following suit, and then you put that together with some of these names like energy, and then you got financials just not acting well. I think that is the risk right here about a cyclical trade in the market that a lot of money wants to rotate into.
Well, what Dan characterized it is just that. It's a wedge or a triangle. What it represents is a standoff, and he used the word tension, meaning you have converging trend lines, and Dan's drawn those lines in a converging price range. We know that the stock is sitting here basically in the apex of that formation, and typically you get a fairly dynamic resolution up and out or down and out, a breakdown or breakout. Now here's the interesting thing. Here too we can look for precedent. We know that Citibank has already collapsed down and broken out to the downside. JP Morgan, however, US Bank Corp, PNC, and most other banks, the BKX, the KRE, have broken to the upside. I think BAC, the bet here is that it will likely get resolved up out of the wedge, the triangle, not down.
Difference of opinion there. Dan, you're looking at Walmart next.
Yeah, so this would be the good right here. So let's go back to July and you look at that ramp. It went up about 10% in a straight line, and then it kept on kind of notching higher. It got as high as 150 here. If you draw a line from that July level up until where we are right now, where it kind of tested there today, I'd say that's a really key support level for a stock that's acted very, very well throughout this pandemic. You know, one of these names that for a lot of fundamental reasons people have been excited about, and we know that that move back in July is when they announced Walmart Prime to compete with Amazon. So, you know, you've had a lot of really good fundamental news in the name, but it's starting to kind of labor a little bit here and break that recent uptrend over the last few months. I just keep an eye on some of your best names because they run the risk of also breaking down.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. So, you know, it's funny. I had a teacher and mentor some 30 years ago, and he said to me, if you can draw a straight line, you'll probably be okay in this business. I thought, my gosh, he doesn't think much of me. But the truth is he was being very candid and honest. And Dan's drawn a straight line. So what we know is this, that the stock got re-rated aggressively higher with the 7th of July. It was its news that it would compete against Amazon Prime. And if you draw a trend line along the sequence of higher lows, we are flirting with either holding or breaking trend. I think Walmart holds here, and my inclination is to be on the long side.
Okay.
Maybe just to end, I've got one chart.
Absolutely.
What's maybe one of the worst charts out there, and maybe you can see it on the screen here. This is MSG Networks. This is, well, if you were to define a downtrend, you'd probably use this as an example among others, but it's an unrelenting circumstance of weakness, both absolute and relative. There are other stocks like it, but this is especially bad.
All right. Carter, great to see you. Thank you. Carter Worth, Cornerstone Macro. A lot of charts to go through. Tim, I'll go to you. Which one caught your fancy?
By the way, the movie's called The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, not The Ugly, the Bad, and the Good. So, yeah, Dan needs to get his Clint Eastwood down. But it was a good exercise, and I'm a Walmart fan. I believe there was re-rating on July 7th. I believe there was a dynamic that's been also, we talk about these trends of acceleration because of COVID, and that's what's going on with Walmart. The digital e-commerce business is soaring. There is a tech company in the middle of the biggest brick-and-mortar retailer in the world. And I think that's part of what you're excited mm-hmm. about. Look how defensive it was on a day. I know it's not just that COVID trades of yesteryear are good trades for an uptick, but I think Walmart has done the fundamental work here, and the chart looks decent.
Karen?
Well, you know, I used to not be a believer in charting stocks, but I've actually come around. And one of the reasons is if enough people think there's merit to it, then there is merit to it. So. Also, I like it when they agree with positions that I have, which is Bank America and Walmart. I still like them both. Walmart for all the reasons that Tim said, and it has this sort of stay-at-home trade, but also a reopen trade or a stimulus trade, and it's not crazy expensive. So I like that. ExxonMobil, not for me.
Guy, what'd you think of Dan's work? I thought he did quite well with his teacher.
Tremendous. Tremendous. I mean, you know, as I've said a multitude of times, Carter Braxton-Worth, you know, he's on the Parthenon of all things being, you know, technician and, you know, that too. He's on both of them, as it turns out. I'll say this as well. I don't know why he's speaking to a grasshopper. I didn't understand a word you were saying there. But I would like to go off the board for 500 and say that I'm surprised Dan didn't bring up Wells Fargo being the ugly, because Wells Fargo is an unmitigated disaster. And now it's within 70 cents of, I think, taking out that March low of $22. I mean, that to me is the one that I think people really got to start to look at and say, what's eating, not Gilbert Grape in this situation, but Wells Fargo, Melissa.
All right. Coming up, Microsoft on deck to report earnings tomorrow. Will the work from home trend spark a rally in this big tech name? That trade ahead, much more Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Today's sell-off had investors piling into treasuries. Check out our chart of the day. The yield in the 10-year falling below 0.8%. Tim, you're watching this move very closely. What was your take?
Well, we have to be watching long rates for a lot of different reasons. Some of them are a barometer of inflation. Mostly, I think they're a barometer of where the economy is. And obviously, the Federal Reserve plays a major role here. But if you look at where we've been going on rates, and we've been talking about rates almost signaling maybe that there was some stimulus, maybe there was not, but either way, breaking back above the 200, which the 10-year yield is trying to do for the first time since December of 2018. Remember, it was effectively trading above the 200-day. Yields were moving higher for almost 2 years as we got into then the fall of 2018 and trade war fears and really all kinds of fears. And remember December 2018, I think we all do. Then yields went below the 200-day and have been, you know, I've been trending and fighting a long time to find a base and build that base. I think we've built that base. I think rates are going higher. The implications are certainly reflation trades will continue to work. And I do think you're going to see more follow through on the economy, even if it's not overnight. Rates don't get away from you on the upside. But again, this trend above the 200-day for long rate signals, I think you've seen the lows.
Is there a trade in your view, Karen, in TLT or in bonds?
Well, one thing interesting today, HYG, the high yield bond, the high yield ETF was down. That's sort of interesting to me. Normally, you know, it would move the other way, but maybe credit's starting to get a little, people are getting maybe a little bit concerned. But I agree with Tim. I think we've seen the bottom of the 10-year, and banks, even though they're not a 2-year, 10-year trade, the stocks trade as if they were. Mm-hmm. So I think if the yield continues higher, Banks will be higher.
All right. Coming up, Microsoft shares taking on the chin today. What can investors expect when they report earnings tomorrow? We'll dive into the options pits next. And at the top of the hour, Cramer is talking to the CEOs of Plug Power and American Electric Power. It's going to be lit. This is it on the prompter. It's going to be lit on Mad Money tonight. Much more Fast Money straight ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Tech getting wrecked in today's sell-off. Check out shares of Microsoft dropping nearly 3% ahead of tomorrow's earnings report. Over in the options markets, traders are betting an even bigger move could be in store when the results cross the wire. Bonawyn Eisen's got the action. Hey, Bonawyn.
Hey, Melissa, how are you doing? So taking a look at the options action, calls outpace puts about 2x to 1. If you take that a step further and take a look at the at-the-money straddles, the options are implying about a 5% move in either direction between now and Friday's expiry. Compare that to about a 2.5% move on average of what we've seen on earnings of the last four quarters. And a trade that I thought was pretty interesting stuck out to me. 1,500 of the Microsoft October 30th, this Friday, November 6th, next Friday, 210, 220 strangle swaps traded for 280. So they bought the 210, 220 strangle out to November 6th, paid 975 for that. They sold the October 30th, 210, 220, same strangle at 695 for a net cash outlay of 280. So after Friday's expiry, your breakevens are going to be about 222.80, 6.5% to the upside, or about 207.20 or 99% of current spot. If the stock breaks 203.05 or 226.95 before Friday, what you're going to do to manage this position is sell out of that November long and buy back that October. I thought this was a pretty interesting way. You're selling earnings vol, you're buying back earnings and election vol. Pretty crafty.
Tim, what are your thoughts on the Microsoft trade going into earnings?
Well, yeah, and the numbers, that chart, they're resting on the 100, so it looks like the weakest of the big five. I would also just say, you know, Intel's data center weakness, SAP's weakness, this may not be just company specific. Watch out for enterprise. Watch out for cloud.
Yep. All right, Bonawyn, thanks. Good to see you, Bonawyn Eisen. For more options action, be sure to tune into the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Up next, final trades. Welcome back to Fast Money. Quick programming note, be sure to catch the Robinhood co-CEO tomorrow morning exclusively on Squawk Box right here on CNBC starting at 6 a.m. We got a market flash here in Las Vegas Sands. Bloomberg reporting that the company is exploring the sale of its $6 billion Las Vegas business. That stock is popping 3.7% in the after-hour session. Guy, quick thoughts here.
Yeah, my initial thought is, I mean, Sheldon Adelson isn't selling into strength here. I mean, that is devastating if they're looking to sell their Las Vegas portion of the business. What does that say about Las Vegas? I mean, you could say he's selling the lows. Maybe he thinks it goes lower from here. That, to me, is a huge story to talk about over the next couple days.
Yeah, Tim, just quickly, I mean, to focus on the Macau business, it's interesting.
Well, maybe. But I think there are some trends we've talked about in terms of online gambling, certainly in this country, that are also global. Some of the heyday of Vegas may be behind us. We'll see.
All right. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Dan Nathan, kick us off.
Yeah, so I'm going to take the other side of Tim's rate trade. I think the 10-year topped out there at its 200-day moving average. I think you can buy the TLT after the decline that's been on over the last couple weeks.
Tim.
AT&T had some very strong subs in their report last week. They're also paying you 7.5% to stick around in that stock. I like AT&T.
Karen.
Yeah, if the market opens down a lot tomorrow and the VIX spikes up, I'm going to be selling some more S&P puts.
Guy.
My Twitter friends educated me as this grasshopper thing. I apologize, Mel. Well done by you. Take Two Interactive in the November 5th earnings release.
All right, Grasshopper. Thanks for watching Fast Money, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.